The Bugs and Meyer Gang, in their early 20s. They could have gone straight, but Prohibition showed them a golden path away from the stench of the tenement. First as gunshot riders and slammers, and then pretty soon their talents promoted them to fully fledged members of the Syndicate of Gangs. It was fast, ruthless, and calculated, with no room for sentiment. As the money rolled in, that Lower East Side stench became an ever sweeter smell. There was violence. And there was the threat of violence.
Roland Perrin, welcome to Jazz FM. Let's talk about your new show. It's coming up on the 27th of April. Lansky, the mob's money man. What inspired this story to life with you?
The short answer to that is I've been spending the last 10 years or so since my parents passed away researching my ancestry. And my parents were first generation Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe. So my grandfather was just a little bit older than Lansky himself and from the same kind of area. So the kind of issues that Lansky was dealing with were the same as my grandparents and actually my father. So that's the first thing that led me to it. And then, of course, being a jazz musician and also interested in the music of B-movies and film noir, and also being I've always played a lot of Afro-Cuban music. The subject just completely lent itself to me. The first jazz clubs were all financed by gangsters involved in bootlegging. I mean, you had jazz, you had illegal liquor, you had the clubs, you had the gangsters, you had the musicians.
Were your family involved in that sort of stuff to a sort of scary level? Do you remember much about it? Do you hear any stories? Was your grandfather and Lansky familiar?
No, actually, it's my father that was kind of straight onto the wrong side of the tracks. My grandfather, of course, there's so much mythology, isn't there, in ancestry, but they say my grandfather was the first Jewish bus driver in New York. So my grandfather had a kind of straight and narrow kind of life. Well, he didn't live very long, unfortunately. Of course, I never met him. But it's my father that was one of these let's get rich quick, even if we have to cut corners kind of guy. Not anywhere near as corrupt as Lansky, but same issues, really.
Did he get rich quick?
Eventually, he got rich, yep. And too quick, my uncle said.
And did that draw its own problems for your family at the time?
Yeah, because he was basically, we were, I'm not exaggerating to say, we were on the run for close to 8 years. From when I was 3 years old, we were constantly moving country, moving house, moving continent.
Moving continent?
Absolutely. Well, we went from New York City to Mexico, to the Bahamas, to Florida, Jacksonville, then to Miami, Florida, then back to New York. Then we went to Scotland, of all, great place to hide. And then we went to London, then we went to the south of England, back to London, and then things kind of settled down.
Right.
And all that time, he was basically on the run with my mother and my six siblings.
Amazing.
So there were nine of us.
So your family was literally running scared from people who were trying to track them down? And,
yeah, the FBI, basically.
Oh, the FBI, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And what about the gangster side? Were they...
No, it wasn't. You see, my father, the whole thing about business, my father was a businessman. And as I'm sure you know, and all our listeners know, the there's a fine line between business and crime. And money laundering and just being clever with your tax return and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah.
So my father obviously never killed anybody, and he wasn't involved in any of that stuff, but he was involved in business crime.
So you're naturally drawn to this story. That yeah. It must have been quite cathartic for you as well along the way to kind of discover things and find
Chris,
out more about who you are.
You got it in one, totally. I mean, I was told all kinds of funny stories, lies and obfuscation and all kinds of things from both my parents. And so when they passed away, I said, right, I'm going to find out really where we're from, who my parents... I'd never have not really found out who my parents were, not really, really. Not that it really matters. It's all over now. But very much catharsis. The whole process the last 10 years has been. And the thing about the... Probably you're going to ask this question, I might as well answer it now, about the commission, is the Crouch End Festival Chorus and David Temple approached me and said they wanted to commission me. And what would I write if they did commission me? Because it didn't drop in my lap. I had to do a kind of a pitch, okay? Which is good, you know, to earn your bread, you know? And so I immediately thought, I'm going to write something about Lansky. And I told them all about it, and they said, hey, that sounds very exciting. Let's go with it.
Tell me about the construct of the music and how you kind of approach this. Is it sort of music that is audibly set back in the 20s and 30s, or how have you put it together?
Stylistically, what I really am not interested in doing is writing pastiche, okay? So it's an interesting question because, for example, the first thing you hear in the piece is a pogrom. And you can hear Jewish music flavors in that, but it's really quite funky, the piece. So it's not my idea is you hear flavors, but you're going to hear my music. Okay, that's the point. The Cuban stuff is not how a Cuban would write the music. It's through my filter. Okay, and also it's not the Cuban. There's three Cuban pieces that are take. That sort of set the story, Cuban episodes of his life, and those pieces they're not for dancing. They're not like okay, let's go and play in a salsa club, but of course you hear salsa and you hear 6/8 and all kinds of Afro-Cuban rhythms in that.
Invited by the ruthless dictator Batista, and lining pockets all around, our hero conquered Cuba, an American playground where high rollers took a holiday from their homespun. The gangsters were only too glad to oblige and indulge, free from the feds and newspapers, although maybe not as immune as they thought.
Is the show purely musical, or is there a sort of acting element to it? Because it's narrated along the way as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So, get ready for this. I needed to come up with a generic name for what this thing actually is that I've created. So here, if I can remember correctly, choral jazz concert drama, okay? Sorry, it's a mouthful. I couldn't come up with anything better. Okay, choral? Yeah, it's a choir. Jazz is a jazz band. I'm a jazz composer. Choral jazz concert. It's a concert. It's not in a theater. You sit there and listen, but it's a drama. So we have a narrator sitting at the side of the stage, sort of telling us very entertainingly what's the trajectory of the of his life and so on. And we've also got Rachel Sutton, who's the lead part. She's a jazz singer and she's also an actress. So she's playing the part of various characters that were touched by Lansky. Because Lansky himself is actually not in the piece. The idea of Lansky standing in the middle of the stage and singing a song, I mean, I just thought, nah, that's not going to happen. But also it goes with the story because Lansky, you know, the thing about Lansky is one of the reasons he was so successful at what he did, which is basically the big prize was money laundering. They say he invented money laundering. The thing is, he was very good at arithmetic. And he was very good at mental arithmetic, and he never wrote anything down.
Of course not.
You know, exactly, you got it. So he said he did kept his business in his hat, which is a nice little phrase, you know. He was full of wisecracks, the guy, you know, typical Jew, full of wisecracks, you know. So they could never pin anything on him. His whole life he went to prison for 6 months, that's all.
And you've obviously done quite a lot of reading into Lansky and about the culture of what went on back then. Mm. Did you have to do an awful lot of research to really nail this?
Yeah, I read, which was all great, except some of the books weren't very good. But I had to, you know how it is, you start a book, you got to finish it. But yeah, I read. There's a couple of, three books that stand out. One's called Little Man. There's another one called Havana Nights. And there's another one which is called Jews Without Money. That I know is by Michael Gold. And that tells you about what it was really, really like without any romanticism to be Jewish in the Lower East Side in 1910, you know. So yeah, I did loads of reading. And it's interesting because it's the thing, elusive thing, you know. You still don't really find out a lot of core stuff. It's all supposition. And it's in the music. All of that's in the music, which is very inspiring. There's one of the songs is called Who Killed Bugsy? Bugsy Siegel was his associate who got slaughtered by the mob. And they never caught who did it, and they think it was Lansky's okayed it, you know.
Yeah.
But you don't know.
You don't know. Yeah. Tell me about the atmosphere in Cuba. And you know, there's an Afro-Cuban passage in this where it's set in Cuba. I mean, we see Cuba today as a place behind a curtain of, you know, taboo. Americans have pretty much still were, until recently, forbidden to go there.
There was a lot of instability. The big turning point was when Cuba became, with the help of the United States, Cuba became independent from Spain, early part of the 20th century, and then it gradually became just an American playground, like a lot of the Caribbean. When Batista, who's this ruthless dictator, came into power in the 50s, believe it or not, he wanted to clean up the casinos. So he got Lansky in. He knew Lansky. He got Lansky in to supervise cleaning up the casinos. His idea of clean, of course, is not our idea of clean. it meant the punters were not ripped off because there was a lot of scamming going on. So because Lansky knew how to run a casino, and honestly, okay. But of course, there was a massive skim that the government took and Lansky took and nobody's paying any tax and all that kind of stuff. Now, at the same time, you've got something like 92% infant mortality amongst poor people. Can you imagine that? Mm. And you've got people living in dire, mainly black people living in dire poverty. And of course, the gangsters didn't notice that at all. Of course they didn't. You know, and then this thing blew up, and they had no idea it was going to be as devastating for them as it was.
Yeah, and the music is so cohesive in all of this. I mean, you know, Afro-Cuban music follows itself through Miami and up to New York. It's a very integral part of the New York music scene. Did Lansky have a particular relationship with music or jazz through his operations?
No, there's no, apart from being involved in clubs and during Prohibition jazz clubs, he had no particular. There's no record of him being particularly artistic. I mean, there's one thing where he used to employ people in hotels and stuff, and he said something about Ginger Rogers having the worst voice he'd ever heard and stuff. So he was just no time for art. I wouldn't have thought.
Numbers.
Know, numbers.
In his head.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wouldn't it be great just to be able to live your life with everything's restored in your head instead of all the digital paper trail we leave behind us today?
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Absolutely. And there's something attractive about kind of being isolated like that, and no one can touch you in a way. I don't know, something about, I think that probably appeals to a lot of people. You'd sort of want to swim to a desert island and leave me alone, you know.
The choir that you're involved with, this is the Crouch End Festival Chorus. Tell me more about that. How many musicians and choir singers and everything are involved in this show?
All right, so the choir are 140 strong.
What?
Yes.
Huge.
The band is a 12-piece band. There's Rachel singing, Rachel Sutton singing, and there's the narrator, Alan Corduner. I don't know if you ever saw the film Topsy Turvy, which was about Gilbert and Sullivan.
Right.
Mike Leigh film. Alan Corduner played Sullivan, or Gilbert or Sullivan, I can't remember which. He played the musician. That's Sullivan. Yeah, Arthur Sullivan, that's the one. Duh. Okay, so that's the size of it. 12-piece band, 140 singers, a lead singer, and a narrator, and a conductor. Listen, that's what I love doing. I wrote it last year, all of July and all of August. I cleared the decks. I didn't do anything but write music. And to be honest, I could not wait to get out of bed every morning to get back to work. Every morning was like Christmas morning. You know, when you're a boy and a kid and you wake up and you can't get out of bed yet Christmas morning because it's too early. You know, it felt like that.
Yeah.
So I worked every day like 8 till 6. And I got stuck once, went for a long walk, got unstuck. Otherwise, it just flowed out of me. I've been writing music since I was 15. So,
Lansky, The Mob's Money Man. And that's at London South Bank Centre, 27th of April, Queen Elizabeth Hall on the South Bank. Very nice talking to you, and I wish you the best.
Thanks, Chris.
You can turn a nickel into a dime. Stick around, you'll have a quarter in no time. So you've got to choose. If you should want or should have, there's not much to lose. You turn a trick, save for another day. You can make a dime into a